a few days. Give it a few days. They will be clamoring for Trump to be impeached again for defying Congress and daring not get permission to drone strike this Iranian terrorist. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Happy New Year. And boy, did it get started off with a bang. Late last night, news broke about the killing of Qasem Soleimani. Now, this dude, let me explain a little bit here by way of background, who he is, and understand his importance and role in all of this. Soleimani, this guy has been for a while the head of an Al-Quds part or component, I guess, of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. But really, it's a completely separate paramilitary group that is responsible, reports directly to the Ayatollah himself in Iran. And this group is essentially a group of militarily sponsored terrorists. He has been the Ayatollah's chief assassin for many years now. And whenever you got to understand how Iran operates, they don't operate through the front door. They don't say, all right, Israel, we want you wiped off the face of the earth, so we're going to go and attack you and land on your soil and fight you. They don't do that. What they do is they send this Al-Quds or Al-Quds group and deploy them to the region, and then they train and supply local simpatico terrorists like Hezbollah, for example. And then Hezbollah fights what we call in this industry a proxy battle. And so this guy is one very bad dude. Now, I will agree with all the haters out there that killing a bad dude just for the sake of him being a bad dude is not always the best strategy. However, pray tell me how this guy, let's connect the dots. I know you're not a CIA analyst, neither am I, but I'm just going to point out that the guy was in Baghdad. He was in Baghdad meeting with the people that were leading these protests, violent attacks against the U.S. embassy. And it's not just the U.S. embassy. These are people that are actively plotting the overthrow of the Baghdad government and a stealth takeover of Iraq by Iran. Iran has wanted this since the Iranian Revolution, and even, I would argue, before. So the idea here that we've got just some visiting military leader who's coming to a friendly neighbor country to say hello is absurd. Now, what I like about Trump is that, you know, when you have something in front of you like this, a decision, he makes the call. And time will tell whether the call was the right one strategically. But I predict that it was. And we'll get a little bit more into that later. So the left has lost its marbles on this, though. And the arguments are actually, you know, pretty solid. I like it. And solid, I'm joking, of course. So what are they saying? Well, no, Pelosi, of course, has come out and said that Trump should have asked Congress first. And I promise you, I tell you, Nat, you're going to hear within a couple days how this is something that may rise to the level of yet another impeachable offense. Because politically, you understand what's going on behind the scenes. Nancy's got to explain why she's holding on to these articles. What better explanation than, whoa, we got to add a couple more. So I predict something along those lines. But of course, apologists all for the Iranian regime. This is Speaker Pelosi yesterday. We cannot put the lives of American service members, diplomats, and others further at risk by engaging in provocative and disproportionate actions. The disproportionate actions. This guy's on the ground meeting with the people that are attacking our embassy. What should we do? Send him a bouquet of flowers? Friends, I grew up in the 80s. In the shadow of the fallout from the Iranian Revolution. And although I was not yet born when our embassy was taken over, when our flag and our sovereignty was humiliated, I very much came of age politically in the aftermath of all of that. I'm talking, of course, about this 1979 Iranian Revolution, where the Ayatollah took control of the country and protesters stormed the embassy. All, of course, a concerted effort by the Iranian regime to humiliate America. Now, I will tell you why that happened. And the why is not the result. The why is not what the Iranians did. The reason it happened was because Carter was a weenie. The reason it happened is that the Iranians in that moment, the Islamists, knew that they had a total wet noodle in the White House. They knew that they could get away with it, and so they did. They pushed the envelope. This is the same reason why, under the Obama administration, even after Obama sent a plane full of cold, hard cash, the Iranians were giggling behind the scenes and continued to enrich uranium and work on their nuclear projects. In other words, these are people that do not respond well to appeasement. And appeasement, the word, of course, popularized during the run-up to World War II, where many in the West wanted to, in various ways, work with Herr Hitler in Berlin, wanted to avert war at all cost, and in the process, basically let Hitler gobble up all of Europe. And in my view, of course, and coming as a person with ties to Central Europe, I think if a little bit more backbone had been shown, a little more Churchill and a little less Chamberlain were shown in the mid to late 1930s, a whole heck of a lot of people would still be alive today, or certainly their descendants would still be alive today. Appeasement does not work. These are terrorists, and they're fanatics. They're Islamic fanatics. Read the book. I'm not going to do. I remember doing that on air over at KBC. That was fun. Do you remember that day, producer Robbie? Oh my God! Oh, so a lot of you may know this. I did the show as I did it not from the KBC studios, but I was safely behind the orange curtain in my own studios nearer to where I live or lived at the time, and so there I. You know, I that show, when I talked about Islam and the fanaticism of Islam rooted in the religion, right? Not a militarized version of Islam or a radicalized version of Islam, but that Islam in its essence, the way the orthodoxy of Islam is actually frighteningly violent and hostile, of course, to the West. And I remember doing the show, and oh my gosh, you could, when I walked down to that studio, because I did it at KBC, I wasn't in my studio, and I did it at KBC, and I walked out of that studio, and you could hear, people were glaring at me. Of course, this is why KBC is going out of business. But anyway, because that's the left. They live in fantasy land. They live in fantasy land when it comes to the economy because they never took an econ course. God help them. They think, money grows on trees and rich people have more trees and you got to take a little few trees for every. It's nonsense, right? When it comes to conflict, they have no idea how to confront a bully. Iran is a bully, and a bully motivated by almost like dealing with a, I don't know, a really profound narcissist and sociopath. They are convinced that they are right. They have religion behind them. They have, I don't know, they're, you're not going to talk them out of it. You're not going to bribe them with money. And you're certainly not going to, you know, yeah, you're not going to win them over by flattering them. The only thing that these Iranian tool bags are going to understand is a slap on the wrist. And this was actually a little bit more than a slap on the wrist, because this guy was a dear friend of the Ayatollah Khomeini. And he was And he was a very important person in Iran's designs and plans to sow discontent and conflict all over the Middle East. All right. Now, I got to tell you. There's a statement. I love this. And by the way, you know, when the Iranians are putting out statements that almost resemble that of people on CNN, you have it's funny. So here is what the Ayatollah put out early this morning. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, following the ascent of the lofty martyr, the Honorable General Haj Qasem Soleimani, may God be pleased with him, I appoint the Honorable Brigadier General Ismail Khani, who has been among the most prominent IRGC commanders during the sacred defense. And it goes on and on to say that basically operationally they're going to be fine. This is not true, because this is a decapitation strike. And when you have somebody like this, and a lot of people are very knowledgeable about this, have said this is going to take them a little bit of time to get out of. There's a 3-day period of mourning in Iran. I believe those 3 days are really designed for them to find the nearest and deepest bunker, and they are all hunkered down figuring out how the hell this happened. When we come back, the tweet that kicked it off, it's hilarious. What a world. We got the Iranian guy and the American guy, meaning Khomeini and Trump himself, tweeting at each other. Somebody held somebody's beer. I will explain when I come back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation radio program. Hi, it's Sam.
Hey, it's Ash, and we're Sam and Ash, your personal injury attorneys.
If you've been injured in an accident, don't talk to an insurance agent or claims adjuster. Talk to us.
Look, the insurance company's job is to deny your injuries, and that's because paying you what's fair costs them money.
We will get you the compensation you deserve. It's what's right.
So visit us at samandash.com.
Samandash.com. Sam and Ash.
Because you deserve what's right.
Oh, speaking of Twitter, you saw, I think, maybe heard about Rose McGowan. She is, I don't even know what this actress has been in. I just know her as the face of the Me Too movement. And we've, of course, been told over and over again what a brave and incredibly wonderful human being she is for standing up to Harvey Weinstein and breaking the story here of Weinstein's terrible transgressions. I am highly suspicious now of anything that Rose McGowan said. I knew she's nutty, but she sends out a tweet yesterday. Dear Iran, this is from a U.S. citizen who is in Hollywood and has an incredibly charmed life compared to 99% of the rest of the world. Dear Iran, the USA has disrespected your country, your flag, your people. 52% of us humbly apologize. We want peace with your nation. We are being held hostage by a terrorist regime. We do not know how to escape. Please do not kill us. Hashtag Soleimani. You know, I am terrified, folks, about what will happen to our country when all these liberals are having children, right? And these kids are going to elementary school. And these elementary schools have, of course, as you know, because it's very fashionable right now, very strong anti-bullying policies. So you have wimps having wimps as kids. So the children of wimps are going to schools where they are, by virtue of the way the system is set up, completely, completely protected from any kind of conflict. I really fear for the world because these coddled youngsters, this is an adult talking. This is someone, this is a modern day Jane Fonda. So I'm going to leave it there. Now, the tweet that I was referencing just before the break came from Donaldus Maximus. On December 31st, this was, of course, in response to the attack on the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. Trump, quote, Iran will be held fully responsible for lives lost or damage incurred at any of our facilities. They will pay a big price. Big price, excuse me, was in all caps. All caps. Big price. This is not a warning. It is a threat. Happy New Year. Exclamation point. Close quote. So that little missive was fired off by Trump, and got a response from the Ayatollah. You gotta love this world here. This is crazy. So the Ayatollah response. I still remember hearing about how Carter sent the Ayatollah a handwritten letter. Do you know the story? Where he sent, you know, they took over our freaking embassy, and Carter sends him a handwritten letter. I'm speaking to you as one religious person to another, appealing to your good nature. The left, folks, I know you're not supposed to use the R word anymore, but they are the R word and always have been. So here's, instead of Carter sending a handwritten letter, Trump sends a tweet and the Ayatollah responds. Now, whoever's writing it, I assume it's not him, or maybe there's a translator. So it's very oddly written, but in English here. Quote, that guy, meaning Trump, has tweeted that we will see Iran responsible for events in Baghdad and we will respond to Iran. First, you can't do anything. Second, if you were logical, which you're not, you'd see that your crimes in Iraq, Afghanistan have made nations hate you. Okay. I wonder how he feels about that tweet today. The two of them were very close, the Ayatollah and this dearly departed lofty martyr, General Haj Qasem Soleimani. So I think Trump knew exactly what he was going to do when he sent the tweet. Over the last couple days, another interesting thing went on, speaking of Twitter, was that Trump was very quiet, uncharacteristically quiet. In fact, there's one period where he went a full 24 hours without tweeting. I submit to you that while everybody in the news media and even some people on our side are fretting that Trump is an out of control nut job, right? That he's an impulsive loose cannon. That there's a lot more thinking going on behind the scenes than they give Trump credit for, and as they continue the political ramifications of all this, as the left continues to underestimate him. I'll explain this when we get back from the break. As they continue to underestimate him, I think the risk, the political risk, is tremendous and leads to a humiliating defeat for the left in 2020 later this year. I have to stop saying in 2020. We are in 2020. The humiliating defeat will occur this year. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rejofsky here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Dombrowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, making radio great again. Yeah. So when somebody tells you, what good is it? What you tell me, Sam, what good is it that Trump took out the Soleimani guy? It's just an escalation. Yeah, he's a bad guy. Yeah, he's killed. But what good is it going to do? I have an answer for you on that. Don't you think it's a little bit odd? I'll start with this. Don't you think that it's a little bit odd and a little bit unacceptable that this Soleimani guy was he just showed up at the airport. He was walking around with his little buddies there, that he could move around as a hostile actor in a friendly territory to the United States with impunity? Can you imagine if, let's say, you work for Google and you're building, I don't know, car automation or maps, I don't know, maps. You're like in the Google map department. And you think that you can just go and stroll around the old Apple headquarters in the map department and be like, hey, man, come with me. Hey, I want to recruit you. Hey, I mean, I'm just putting it into business terms. If I've got a competitor, I sure as hell don't let that competitor's top people just stroll around my office. The fact that this guy was brazen enough to just be there strategically, this will force Iran's nefarious operations against Iraq underground. They won't be able to just send in their top guy to mobilize and train and inspire and lead efforts to destabilize Iraq. They're going to think twice about it, probably because, you know, all these pictures coming out of the dude's hand, you know, laying there with the big ring. Yes, we have pictures of al-Soleimani's hand. Excuse me, Qasem Soleimani's hand just laying there on the ground. It's pretty gruesome. But yeah, the guy that replaced him, what's his name? Oh, this all sounds the same. Brigadier General Esmail Kahani, prominent IRGC commander. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the sacred defense of Iran is going to be a little trickier now, because these guys aren't going to be sent out into the field. And I promise you, when you push leadership underground, it does not make things easier. It makes things harder. So my direct answer to this nonsense I'm hearing everywhere today, this hand-wringing, this didn't do anything. President, vice president, wannabe president, corn pop Biden. The administration's statement says that its goal is to defer future attacks by Iran. But, and these are his words, right? This is his statement. But this action almost certainly will have the opposite effect. President Trump just tossed a stick of dynamite into a tinderbox. And he owes the American people an explanation of the strategy. No, he doesn't. That's what your idiot president that you were vice president in the administration have always did. You got on television to explain what your strategy was. This is literally the land of stupid. Oh, whatever happens, we cannot let Joe Biden anywhere near the White House again. Enough damage done. So this I am telling you, this politically, this is a non-starter. These arguments are so weak and feeble. And what you will see, friends, what you will see in all of this is a backfire. We are 10 months away from the election. This right now is, we'll call it, we're getting to the closing argument of why not Trump, because that's what the election's about. The election's about yes to Trump, no to Trump. Because all the other guys, the guys on the other side, these guys and ladies, they are not particularly exciting. They're not particularly inspirational. But they are there. And by virtue of being there, the referendum becomes a question of whether we want Trump or not. And so I all of this, if you think, you know, if you look at the beginning of this argument being impeachment, and I will argue it precedes it, but if you look at it, you go impeachment. It was the start of it. These are all the reasons why Trump is unfit for office. And they're all political arguments. They're not constitutional arguments. They're not legal arguments. They're political arguments. Fine. Impeachment is a political process. Got it. But don't hide behind lofty reasons for voting for impeachment if you are one of the Democrats that did. You were political. It is what it is. The fact it's not going anywhere, the fact that Nancy can't even get off these impeachment articles, the fact that she's looking for more dirt, and the fact that in order to it, they are willing, the left is willing to side with Iran in order to score points against the president is not a winning deal. And by the way, the thing in Rose McGowan's tweet, that one about we've been taken over, America's taken over, forgive us, Iran, please, please, white flag, don't hurt us. The stupidest thing in her tweet was saying that 52% of Americans are with her. That is not true. It is absolutely delusional. Yeah, maybe Iran will give her asylum. True, 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 Robbie. Sam Rzhovsky back right after this. Hi, it's Sam.
Hey, it's Ash, and we're Sam and Ash, your personal injury attorneys.
An accident is incredibly stressful. Handling an insurance claim, totally overwhelming.
Also, insurance companies have zero interest in giving their money to you because that just cuts into their profits.
Our team is in your corner because you deserve what's right, and that's full compensation for your injuries.
So visit us 24/7 at samandash.com.
Sam and Ash.
Because you deserve what's right.
Well, I never cease to be amazed by how tone-deaf the left is. And this, I've said this before, over and over again. I think that this is all intentional on the part of Trump. That over the holidays, I was with family. Oh, I know, I cannot keep my mouth shut. And my young nephews, they're in high school, okay? I had my head screwed on pretty straight when I was in high school, but for some reason, my nephew growing up in Texas has his head up in the clouds. And so we were talking about Trump. And all the usual arguments, you know, he's on and off. Trump is so mean. He's so mean. And he tweets too much. Okay. I have never in my life seen a politician so cleverly get the other side to commit political suicide like I have here with Trump and the MAGA movement. It's unbelievable. I had a niece tell me, I believe she's about 14 or 15, and she told me, she says, I just don't think he's very good at politics. And I said, well, when the history books are written with some passage of time and clarity of thought and I think when emotions die down, historians will recognize that Trump is one of the most brilliant political thinkers. And when you factor in the truth that he was never in politics, that he was a total outsider when he came to the presidency, had no political base, no political, you know, machine behind him, no experience, and that he essentially came with these skills and that it was intuition that guided him through this. Nothing short of brilliant. It's not going to age well. None of this, the initial response here with this fight with Iran, even a week ago when we were on break and I was away from the Sam Nation microphone. We could not discuss in the moment what was going on with the embassy in Baghdad. But that is also a classic setup of how stupid and short-sighted the left is. So the criticism started immediately. Ha-ha! Trump! See, how do you like it now? You've got your own Benghazi. And you had people on the left, elected members of Congress, people at CNN. I think is that one and the same thing. I'm not sure. But none of the operatives of the DNC. You had people literally rooting for the death of Americans at the embassy. You had people rooting to have another Benghazi. Now, the thing that I think is so funny about this, I'm sure this struck you as odd as well. I thought Benghazi was not Benghazi. Meaning, I thought that we'd always been told that Benghazi was really an unstoppable, unavoidable whoopsie daisy. And that certainly no responsibility for it could be laid at the feet of our leadership. Now, you and I, we know nothing's further from the truth. And we saw on full display what decisiveness, what military leadership and political leadership looks like. And it came from the bad man president, the big bad orange man president. It came from the guy who is consistently getting ridiculed for being impetuous, shallow, and weak. So this, to me, is hilarious. Oh, yes. Yeah, there was a headline in the Babylon Bee: Hillary Clinton slams Trump for not taking a more hands-off approach to the embassy attack. I'm telling you, the reason it's parody, the reason it's funny is because it's true. And it's creating a not so good situation for the Democrats and their political fortunes. Here is a little clip of some of the reasoning behind all of this here with the strike in Iran. This is from CNN earlier today. And you have Arwa Damon and Max Boot. Max Boot is kind of never Trumper GOP guy, who I believe writes for the Washington or the Wall Street Journal. Here you go. Listen to this.
This strike is fairly brazen, fairly audacious to a certain degree, to be taking out someone of such significance at a time when there is such tension in the region.
This is a crisis that President Trump has really created between the U.S. and Iran, because although the U.S. and Iran have a long history of animosity dating back to 1979, relations had actually quieted down quite a bit since President Obama concluded the Iranian nuclear deal in 2015.
What? That Trump created? Oh, I know, because he wasn't a pacifist enough for your liking. Let me explain to you, right, what was going on. It was plain as day for all of us. Obama turned over a whole lot of money and got in return a deal. And he returned back to the U.S., figuratively speaking, much like Chamberlain did from Berlin, holding up a piece of paper and peace in our time. Haven't we learned anything from history? It's nonsense. It's feel-goodism. People, y'all want to just feel good. That's what this is about. And the party, the Democratic Party, the left, they will make you feel good in the moment. And if you're a young, stupid high school student, shouldn't be too mean. But if you have a head full of nothing, and your teachers are all avowed members, card-carrying members of the American Communist Party, a.k.a. Bernie Sanders supporters, then of course you think very in a very Pollyannish terms. But nothing good has been achieved by giving in to terrorists, negotiating with people who are advocating for our destruction. And so I think as this is an idea right here, Max Boot saying that this is something Trump created. No, I mean, we sent them a bunch of money. And what did they do? They thumbed their noses at us. And did not only did they continue to enrich uranium and build nuclear weapons, but far more troubling, with this guy that just got killed, continued to attack and kill U.S. soldiers. Wrap your heads around that one. What kind of a freaking deal did Obama make for us? Seems like not too good of one if we gave him $1.5 billion or whatever it was, and they continue to kill our guys with that money. No, sir. When this is all said and done and people are looking back at this, Trump will be in the right. And I think even in short-term political strategy here, this is none of this is going to wear well for the left. All right. We have more to go over. The shooting in Texas. I do want to talk about that because it has reopened an important debate about the Second Amendment. And I think very interesting you're getting all the expected responses from people. So I do want to get into that. Impeachment, of course, it's still there, but not really. And the rise of anti-Semitism, I do want to get into that as well. This is a very scary time for a country, and it's very interesting to see who is there fighting for the right here on this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rojofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Hi, you're not going to believe this. Hillary Clinton may be leaving the country. She's joining the Queen's University in Belfast as their chancellor. Now, because she is both chancellor and a previous secretary of state, she is now the chancellor secretary, Hillary Rodham Clinton. So whenever we have her now on television, we'll have to refer to her as chancellor secretary. And I'm unsure if there's going to be a hyphen or not, but nonetheless, I just want to prepare you for a mouthful that is going to be coming your way on CNN. Chancellor Secretary Hillary Rodham Clinton. I don't think, folks, she's running for president. I think that's clear that she's looking for other alternatives. Also, must be tough to go from raking in billions of dollars, now about hundreds of millions of dollars, in her family charity, pay-to-play money. Efforts to win over her love and attention in her future role as president of the United States. That money train has, of course, derailed. And so I think this is a cash play. She's got to come up with some amount of money. I don't know what this gig pays, but every little bit helps. And staying relevant and important is important if you're a Clinton. But this is literally how little the world cares. I mean, have you ever heard, not putting down Queen's University, Belfast, but have you ever heard of that school? I mean, it's not like she's going to an Oxford college. I don't know. She didn't get a gig anywhere in the U.S. So anyway, this is all good news. Hillary's gone. Trump is president. We can live to enjoy another day. Gun control is back in the spotlight this after the shooting in Texas. The shooting in Texas, of course, ended just as quickly as it began. Bad guy with gun comes in. Good guy with gun draws gun, fires, kills bad guy with gun. By the time the police showed up, everything was over. And absolutely no question about it that lives were spared. Now, I'm going to tell you something about gun control. I get that if you think that there's too many guns out there and that bad things happen with guns, okay. But as I've said over and over again, the solution is not to prevent good guys from having guns, because the bad guys with the guns always get the guns. And this story is actually being ignored, for a detail here that's extremely important. So everybody's talking about the story as good guy with gun. And that's the focus of the piece. Oh, was how good of a guy was he? Well, you know, this is the kind of person, I've heard this from the left, right? This is the kind of person we want with a gun, because he was a former FBI agent. And he was a gun safety instructor. And this guy was, well, maybe he wasn't law enforcement, but he was a trained professional. So a lot of emphasis on the guy. And he, of course, is a hero. His name is Jack Wilson. What an American name. Jack Wilson. And his shooting school is called the On Target Shooting Academy. Trains people to handle guns safely and use their guns safely. And I would assume gives training for permit holders who wish to carry concealed weapons. So that's what he does. And apparently he's a deacon in the church, and he's part of the church's security program. Now, the emphasis, I think, has to be on the shooter, on the bad guy, because the bad guy was a felon. He's got a criminal history, and he's not allowed to have a gun. This, my friends, is exactly the entire argument about curtailing the Second Amendment. Because liberals think that if you decree something, it will happen. If we want to eradicate poverty, we shall eradicate it simply by taxing those evil rich bastards and transferring. Well, along the way, we're going to lose a little bit of money because we got to pay for some important things for us. But, you know, but we're going to transfer all this money, make all the poor people wealthy. Or live well. It ignores all economic principles. The same is true with gun control. Because gun control, if you edict that guns be turned in, look at what happened in New Zealand. They had the mosque shooting, a horrible attack on the mosque. They decide to go confiscate all AR-15 assault rifle guns. And who turns them in? The good guys, everybody who go, a law-abiding person, people who have things to lose, people who do not want to be in violation of any law, they all turn in their guns. Do you think for a minute that the bad guys turn their guns in? The only bad guys that turn their guns in on that day were the bad guys that really, really, really needed drug money. I mean, those are the people who turn their guns in because you get a little compensation for it. Government writes you a check. No, give it time. And in New Zealand, there will be another shooting. And now the good guys aren't going to have guns. So this guy who went into the church shouldn't have had a gun, was legally prohibited. He's a prohibited person. Cannot be in possession of a firearm, which in and of itself is a felony. But once you have one felony, what's another one? What's the third one? Doesn't matter. Because to lawbreakers, they are breaking laws once. They're going to break laws again. And the terrible thing, the biggest myth, three words, gun-free zones. The left thinks that you can put up a little sign at the entranceway to an elementary school that says no guns allowed on campus. And like that, presto, there will be no guns on campus. Do you understand how absolutely, purely insane that is? Because bad guy with gun looks at the sign and goes, I'm on a suicide mission. I don't freaking care. And no amount of confiscatory policies, even if you took this all the way to the extreme, no amount of confiscatory policy would remove all guns. And it would simply remain, that guns would remain in the hands of bad actors. Now, Bloomberg, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, this guy's running for president. He is spending ungodly sums of money to advance his campaign. This man has spent hundreds of millions of dollars to not even register a tick in the polls. If you want to imagine what it's like to be massively rich, think about being able to piss away hundreds of millions of dollars on a vanity project. Now, as you know, Michael Bloomberg is all about protecting people from themselves. He is the author of the soda tax in New York, because, of course, you and I cannot be trusted to select the size of soda that we want. So tax the soda. I think it was a ban on certain sizes of sodas. Can't have the big gulp. Well, he also wants to take guns away. And he, in the aftermath of this last shooting, where the good guy with the gun stopped the bad guy who shouldn't have even had a gun, but had a gun and killed somebody. This is what Michael Bloomberg had to say about it.
It's the job of law enforcement to have guns and to decide when to shoot. You just do not want the average citizen carrying a gun in a crowded place. So it turned out okay, but that does not make this a practice that is sensible. And I don't think most people want to go to events where people have guns and decide who they want to shoot and who they don't want to shoot.
Yeah, and it's easy for him to say because Bloomberg has a whole team of security. And when he was an elected official, when he was mayor of New York, of course, he had NYPD security. And now he hires, no doubt, security, I'm sure, that is our off-duty policemen who would be, of course, exempt from any of this. So it's easy. I get it. It's really easy if you're a leftist to tell the rest of us what kind of security conditions we're going to live under. If every shooting ended something like this, like the way it ended in Texas, and you had, by the way, if everything ended like that, and that was the understanding, if I'm a bad actor and I walk into a church and there's going to be seven people to draw a gun on me, I think that the shooting epidemic, in part, people, these perpetrators pick soft targets. They pick churches. They pick elementary schools. They pick Walmarts where you're not allowed to carry, and people, you know, if you're law abiding and you're a gun owner, you don't want to lose that privilege. So what do? You walk into the Walmart, you put your gun away. You lock it up in your car. I think there's a massive deterrent effect to believing that there is going to be an immediate swift response. But why do people go in and commit mass shootings? In part for notoriety. They want a high number of kills. They don't just shoot somebody around the corner by their house. They go into a crowded place. Well, you certainly get a lot less notoriety if all you do is take out one or two people. I mean, not to be crude about this, but numbers matter. So this entire story is fantastic. By the way, you saw Joe Biden. He can't stay away from this. So he chimed in on this thing, too, and said something to the effect, well, you know, I mean, this is not the way we wanted to operate. And immediately as he chimed in on it, old clips of him talking about the very law. There's two different laws in Texas that give permission to lawful gun owners carrying guns into houses of worship. One in 2017 and the second one, I think, earlier this year. And earlier last year, 2019. So early 2019, a second law that allowed any gun owner who is in lawful possession of a firearm and able to carry concealed to allow him or her to carry a gun into a house of worship, into a church, provided that that church did not have a policy prohibiting it. Well, Biden and everybody else, by the way, at the time, said this is insane. This is crazy. But what Governor Abbott and the Texas legislature understood is that gun-free zones are insane. It is the definition of insanity to create places where unarmed citizens are sitting ducks in a world where the bad guys have guns. So this, watch this closely. I see it, too, really, as another bellwether of a certain conflict in our cultural zeitgeist, right? And we have this conflict, right, between Trumpists and elitists, right? I would say is one of the polarities. Elites like Bloomberg, right, telling us what we need and what we should have and how we should behave and how smart they are and telling us how to live our lives. And then on the other side, by and large, Trump supporters, but also other people who are far more understanding of the reality on the ground and don't want to be told by CNN and don't want to be told by the liberal elites how to live their lives and how to be safe. And one thing you got to admire politically is that Texas stood up to conventional thinking on this and said enough is enough. The only way we're going to prevent this problem from occurring, meaning mass shooting in churches, they've had a series of these incidents in Texas. One of the deadliest massacres occurred, I believe it was in Corpus Christi, 26 or 27 people died. This was about a year and a half ago. And you got to believe that these laws came into effect as a result, and the result now bore positive fruit in the form of lives saved. So I submit that this, again, is going to be a talking point. And the Democrats can't leave it alone. They can't say, all right, well, you know, this is an example. This is an example of a good guy with a gun moving right along. No, there he is. Bloomberg can't help himself, and he has to say, nope, you are too stupid. Speaking to us, like, we're too stupid. We shouldn't be trusted with guns. Remember that UPS, poor UPS truck driver? This was in Chicago. His truck gets hijacked right before Christmas. Police respond. They fired something like, I don't know, 100 rounds at his truck, killed him. Those are the professionals with guns. Meanwhile, in Texas, one guy, not a cop, shoots one round, kills the assailant, game over. Bloomberg is an idiot. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Oh boy, further left-wing disconnect from the heartland of America. You know, one story over the holidays before we decided that World War III is imminent was that Trump and the evangelicals shouldn't really be together. The evangelicals, we were told, should not support Trump because Trump is bad. He's a horrible human being. His morals are weak sauce. And so this uncomfortable friendship, I don't know what you'd call it, the odd couple relationship between Trump and the evangelicals, the media told us, was frayed and fractured. And this all came as a result of that article and that editorial in the Christian newspaper that said, you know, something to the effect that Trump is unfit to be president, and the left ran with it. Now, Chuck Todd, who is one of my favorite people, in the amount of material that he delivers to us here to make this program, Chuck Todd really stepped in it on Sunday. This was on NBC's Meet the Press. He's using somebody else's words as political cover, but in effect, he's adopting those words. And when you listen to this, you understand the contempt that the left has for religious people. Trying to connect the dots, but folks, make no mistake, the left has nothing but contempt for you if you are religious. Listen to this.
I want to read you guys a letter to the editor that we found in the Lexington Herald Leader. It was a fascinating attempt at trying to explain why some people support President Trump. Here's what he says. Why do good people support Trump? It's because people have been trained from childhood to believe in fairy tales. This set their minds up to accept things that make them feel good. The more fairy tales and lies he tells, the better they feel. Show me a person who believes in Noah's Ark, and I will show you a Trump voter. Look, this gets at something, Dean, that my executive producer likes to say is, hey, voters want to be lied to sometimes. They don't always love being told hard truths.
Well, but let me answer this politically first. Trump has been saying nothing but hard truths, for example, on the subject of immigration. And Chuck Todd and his peeps are going apoplectic in the seizures that they are having over it. So it's really an interesting deal. This letter to the editor, by the way, is over a year old. So this is not any new news. They're digging it up now because they are looking to form a wedge between Trump and his base. And here is my commentary on this. What in the literal name of you-know-who? Well, we'll call it who should we invoke? I want to invoke somebody. The lofty martyr, General Haj Qasem Soleimani. What in the name of Haj Soleimani are they thinking? I know Trump is politically stupid, and Chuck Todd and the Democrats, I mean, they are brilliant. They have all the answers. So let me see if I understand it. So the way that you brilliant people are going to drive a wedge between Trump and his, you know, Christian conservative base is by insulting them? By telling them that their religion is a bunch of fairy tales? I know this is radio, guys. My mouth is wide open. And I am perplexed by this. Just when I thought these guys couldn't be any more stupid, they surprise me. And they do this 10 months before the election. It's like a tee-up to get Trump voters mad. The same way that impeachment is backfiring, this is backfiring. It's all backfiring. Trump's relationship with his base is something that he created. He made it happen. He formed the relationship. He's the only one that can break it. And the reason that these people are mad, frankly, is not because it's a relationship based on, I don't know what the word would be, but the idea that it's a relationship that's superficial and based on some temporary convenience. But they're mad because the relationship keeps getting stronger as Trump comes through in his promises. Trump is, when it comes to the conservative base, Trump has been a reliable president. He's been a defender of religious freedoms. He has been true to his word on matters like abortion. He has been consistent in his judicial philosophy. And I'm telling you, the relationship between Trump and his Christian evangelical base has never been stronger. Now, Trump might not be a great Christian, but not only does he not have the contempt for them that Obama did and that the Democratic Party has as a whole, as a group, but he supports them and he admires them in many ways. Yeah, this is so tone deaf. So put this is another factoid to put in your toolbox when you're talking to libs and they tell you, 2020, Trump's out of here. And, you know, he's not going to hold his base of support is crumbling. Huh? Okay. Well, let me ask you this. How good must it be for Trump if the left is resorting to insulting Trump's base and alienating Trump's base in an ill-fated attempt to drive a wedge between them? Now, that's something to think about. So, Chuck Todd for the win. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, a temporary lull in the impeachment drama. Democrats are distracted with supporting Iran right now. And so I think, interestingly enough, I don't know. There's a good chance that the articles of impeachment will never go to the Senate. Nancy may just hold on to them forever. And their argument is going to be, the argument will be that the Senate has declared itself not impartial. The Senate has declared itself as politically aligned. Now, you'll hear this argument over and over again. Here's a taste of it from Chuck Schumer talking about Mitch McConnell, who is the Senate majority leader. So Chuck Schumer being the minority leader, criticizing McConnell for discussing his overt pro-Trump bias.
I was disappointed to hear yesterday that Leader McConnell declared that he would not be an impartial juror when it comes to the serious charges against President Trump. He said it proudly. What kind of example does that set to the country who's looking for fairness and impartiality? In the event of a trial, every senator will swear an oath, different from our standard oath of office, to do impartial justice. But yesterday, McConnell told reporters, I'm not an impartial juror. This is a political process. I'm not impartial about this at all. This is an astonishing admission of partisanship.
He doesn't even sound like he believes it. He is reading this straight from a note card on the floor of the Senate with, Schumer's a good public speaker and he can be persuasive. He is not even persuaded about this himself. But it's a talking point. Guys, it's here for a reason. They are saying this because they want to find an excuse to basically sit on the articles of impeachment. Now, I've told you one of the reasons for this incubation, if you will, is that it's a fundraising effort. It's a political effort for the House and for the Senate to use this as an issue during the election, right? We need to kick out these bum Republicans that are not being fair, that are refusing to hold Trump accountable. And so they're fundraising off of this. I mean, politically, there is no chance in hell that the Democrats win the Senate. I just don't see that happening. Certainly not if the election were to be held today. But I do see this as a fundraising push. Absolutely a fundraising effort. But there is also there's also now as it drags on, and I think every week that goes by that Nancy sits on this, she looks more and more foolish. So this is going to be what you will hear over and over again discussed. Look, we can't send it to the Senate because the Senate has already declared that they're not going to be fair. Now, I want to talk about this because if you dig through the archives, Chuck Schumer back in 1999, speaking to Larry King about the Clinton impeachment, had a very, very different take. And I will comment to you about this when the clip concludes. Pay attention to this very closely. Solid stuff.
How can you judge a trial in which you have already stated an opinion or have an opinion? You'd be thrown off a jury in any court in America, right?
Right. Well,
you have a pre-opinion.
This is not a criminal trial. But this is something that the founding fathers decided to put in a body that was susceptible to the whims of politics. And I felt that to have my state have half the representation of every other state wouldn't make sense.
So therefore, anybody taking an oath tomorrow can have a pre-opinion. It's not a jury box.
Many do. And they may change. And in fact, it's not like a jury box in the sense that people will call us and lobby us. You don't have jurors called and lobbied and things like that. I mean, it's quite different than a jury. And we're also the judge.
So This is exactly the heart of what impeachment is. And if there's no other takeaway here, other than, of course, Schumer is an opportunistic little politician scum. Other than that, the takeaway is understanding what impeachment is, that it is an inherently political process, and that these games that Nancy is playing with it is within her rights. It's part of the process. It was always intended to be a political process, because if it weren't, our founding fathers would have placed impeachment in the hands of the judiciary and not in the hands of the legislative branch. And what I mean about this is, certainly, if it was meant to be a pure fact-finding mission with right and wrong and a standard of judgment based on the rule of law, the courts would be an appropriate venue. That these cases of impeachment would be heard by the Supreme Court. Instead, it is a process merely overseen by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and only to the extent of form, not necessarily of substance. And the judgment that occurs in the Senate is purely of a political nature. So McConnell getting up and saying, yeah, what I this is a political witch hunt, I'm paraphrasing and echoing the words of the president. This is a political mess. I don't want anything to do with it. I've already made up my mind. I'm not seeing anything here that rises to the levels of impeachment offense. Case closed. The bigger issue here to me is why McConnell, who is an extremely careful and measured guy, politically seasoned, he's been around 120 years, I think. Carbon dating hasn't come back exactly accurately, but he seems to have been around for quite some time. McConnell is a shrewd operator. So why did he get up and say, I've already made up my mind. I've judged this. There's nothing here. I'm moving on. Well, I give you two reasons. One is that it's a political process for him, too. He is running for re-election, and he has decided, correctly in my view, that the way to run for re-election in his red state is to run as a pro-president, pro-Trump, anti-impeachment Republican. Which I will say, Mitch McConnell's a pro-Trump Republican is pretty laughable, but he's running for impeachment. You almost could get McConnell now to say that he's anti-illegal immigration, because usually it's this time in the cycle that Republicans always, well, establishment Republicans become very pro-immigration reform. So he's doing it to save his skin. And I think the other reason is to bait House Democrats into this standoff, because this standoff only makes the House Democrats look awful. And believe you me, the Senate would want nothing more. The GOP Senate leadership would want nothing more than more Republicans in the House. They would like to take over both houses of Congress and have not just the Senate, but also the House. And I think they recognize, and this is the truth. I think they recognize that by dragging this out, Nancy Pelosi is not doing herself any favors. She's not doing any favors to the 31 Democrats who are in very vulnerable districts. Their principled, quote unquote, principled position of doing the right thing on impeachment is starting to look sillier and sillier. And in this sense, I believe McConnell is he's baiting them. He's baiting them into being stupid, petty, and political. Don't get me wrong, McConnell's political too. But in positioning it the way he has, he is forcing the Democrats to ridicule themselves. So that's the analysis of that. When we come back, well, yeah, I know. Rise in anti-Semitic attacks, very disturbing. Hate crime speech. I think this is something that I want to talk about, because it factors into this, and it's something we have to be careful about as we seek to preserve our republic. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Disturbingly, more and more anti-Semitic attacks are occurring, especially in places where they have a lot of liberals. And I am not surprised by this. I'm going to have to say this delicately. Because anti-Semitism has always been about class warfare. This is my firm opinion. Jews, historically, when you look at, for example, the rise of Hitler in Europe, it was always about the success of the Jewish people in their communities and the scapegoating of those peoples for the lack of success of others. Now, if you take Judaism religion out of it, really what it boils down to is a very fundamental left-wing principle, which is the rich people are bad, the landlords are bad, the factory owners are bad, they're all exploiting us, they're taking advantage of us, and we must do something about it. I've watched a number of these videos that are circulating right now about attacks on the subway and people yelling at Jewish people, and it's horrible stuff. But it all comes down to exploitation. They are Bernie Sanders' talking points. Now, I am not calling Bernie Sanders an anti-Semite yet, but you have to understand that this is anti-Semitism is just one component of class warfare and classism. And that this is something, this is a divisive tool. The instilling envy and resentment is a tool that the left has used to maintain political control ever since Karl Marx came on the scene, and probably even before. So there is that. I, as a lawyer, am always concerned when we create new laws to fix old problems. Because I tend to think, philosophically, the fewer laws, the better. I like laws that are simple, straightforward, sufficiently broad, and at the same time, sufficiently narrow. And I happen to think, generally speaking, that hate crime legislation is just a terrible idea. And let me explain this. I like ideas, bad ones, horrible ideas getting voiced. Because I think that in this process of hearing the left turn anti-Semitic, it's going to be a very good thing for us as a country to recognize where anti-Semitism is coming from. It's, by the way, truly happening. There was a reporter, I forget, some journalist on Vox. Well, here, we've got the clip. Jane Coast. Vox is a left-wing publication, online publication. Trust me, Vox is not Fox. And this gal actually starts talking about anti-Semitism and where it's coming from. Well, play the clip.
I think that one of the challenges we have is that we keep wanting to use anti-Semitism or racism as a cudgel against our political opposites, forgetting that anti-Semitism exists across the political spectrum. There are a lot of famous instances of the far right and the far left coming together on the subject of hating Jewish people. You see Nation of Islam making common cause with George Lincoln Rockwell, the founder of the American Nazi Party back in the early 1960s. And a lot of the most virulent anti-Semitism comes from Nation of Islam and some of its acolytes.
I think this is revolutionary. And it's revolutionary because you got somebody on the left actually saying, you know what, Nation of Islam, by the way, strong ties to Barack Obama for 8 years during his presidency. You remember that whole entanglement. Nation of Islam, biggest source of virulent anti-Semitism. So it's starting, people are talking about it. But the idea that we have enhancements, I mean, look, an assault is an assault. A murder is a murder. And I happen to think that violent crimes ought to be punished. But what we're doing, and punished severely, but what we're doing is we're creating a separate class of crimes for your thoughts and motivations. And this is not always a good thing because it can spread and start to get a little out of hand. Let me give you an example. I think last year, end of last year, so not too long ago, the New York City Commission on Human Rights defined the term illegal alien as a hate speech and proposed up to a $250,000 fine in New York City for using it in a way that would be defamatory, mean, you know, demeaning or whatnot. And this is crazy. And by the way, I don't think that would stand. But I think it's very important that we let people say horrible things and announce their horrible intentions in order to discredit these horrible thoughts. And I also don't think that it's so funny because in New York, they have all these enhancements for hate crimes. But they have every one of these felons that has been attacking, it seems to me, at least the last three or four attacks, were all committed by people who are as criminals have been through a revolving door in the criminal justice system. And interestingly enough, New York City seems to be applying. I'm just from what I take is that these people keep getting released after committing hate crimes against Jews. They keep getting released because the judges themselves are leftists and are sympathetic to their cause. I mean, I guarantee you that if they use the term illegal immigrant while beating somebody on the street, that they never would have been let out again. So I'm watching this closely. I don't like new laws. I know Trump put out, when was that? Last month, early last month, put out a decree expanding Title VI protections to religious identity. I as a general rule, I don't like these type of enhancements. I like sticking to the basic idea that we treat each other decently and civilly, that we be able to travel on a subway, on a bus, walk on the sidewalk without fear of attack. And if somebody attacks us for whatever reason, they go to jail. And if they cause bodily harm, then of course they go to jail for a while. So this, I think, we will watch this very closely and stay on top of it. All right, friends, it's been a fantastic 2 hours, a great start to the new year. Really happy to be here with you, and I will see you here next week, same time, same place. Have a wonderful weekend. Take care.